You're listening to a podcast from 702.
But for now, we bring you matter of fact. Our WhatsApp line has a number of comments of people saying that they're not very thrilled that matter of fact will not be a feature, so to speak. As I said, the team from Africa Check is staying close to the show. They'll stay close to the station, but we won't be doing it at the frequency or the way we've been doing it over these many, many years. Are you sad? Are you sad to see these conversations no longer happen at the frequency that we've been having them, matter of fact? And maybe give us a sense of how it has served you to hear conversations around fact-checking, around setting the record straight on a number of claims that can often be made in the public arena. And we often need someone to kind of frame it for us, give us the broader context, locate the claim in this framework so that we know whether or not it's true, how much of it is true, how much of it is correct and incorrect. And I think it's been a really wonderfully mind-opening time with the team from Africa Check. Kate, good afternoon.
Hey, Azza.
Oh, don't use that tone.
Yeah, I was thinking back. I think we must be, what, close on 2 years now that we've been having these chats every couple of weeks.
I think close on three.
Is it?
Yeah.
You know, the time flies when you're fact-checking.
Yeah, it does. There's a new one. Move over. Time flies when you're having fun. Time flies when you're fact checking. That's what it is. Yeah. Well, it's all around how long, approximately how long Donald Trump has been in office. Because that's what really got us going in that post-truth era when Donald Trump came into office and how he ran his race and some of the issues that were, that came up during that time. So that's when we first started this whole thing.
Absolutely. And I think that what we have seen every time we've chatted and, you know, when we engage with the listeners, whether it's on air or via email or on Twitter, is that irrespective if we're talking about Trump or we're talking about South Africa, there's always something that we need to investigate. It's a claim we hear, a tweet we read, and there's something inside of us that just says, oh, is that right? Is there evidence to back it up? Yeah. And over the years, we've been very grateful to have this opportunity to help people find where the truth lies. But like you said, we are not going anywhere. We're always going to be in touch. Mm-hmm. We can always pop in if there's something very pressing that we need an answer for. And listeners can always get in touch with us. We want to work with the public to identify what's important to understand and verify.
Yes, yes. So let's get that started. We've got three stories, in fact, to interrogate today. One comes from one of my favorite reads, the New York Times. They got something wrong pertaining to South Africa and our COVID-19 infection rates.
They did, absolutely. So there was quite a large feature in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago regarding the allegations of corruption during our COVID-19 lockdown. And it detailed the numerous incidences which have come to light and what government and different role players were doing to try and address them. But in trying to quantify the scale of the pandemic in South Africa, it laid out a couple of numbers. And one significant figure that it cited was not even slightly incorrect. It was just completely wrong.
And so they said that we're ranked fifth highest infection rate in the world. Where did you start? I mean, we have to understand what that means, especially when we talk about rate. Is that the key part of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, the numbers which were laid out was that South Africa is overwhelmed by more than 592,000 coronavirus cases, and it has the fifth highest infection rate in the world. So why don't we start with the numbers that were cited? When it came to the number of cases that the New York Times attributed to the country, that was correct. On the day that the story was published, they were in line with our official statistics. And they were actually also right to say that we have the highest number of reported cases in Africa, and we actually have more than half of Africa's cases. But where the wheels started to fall off is what you pointed to, which is what does infection rate mean? Because the very specific claim that it made was that we had the fifth highest infection rate in the world. And in support of that, they linked to the dashboard of their coronavirus statistics. And I'm sure lots of us have been interacting with these dashboards. You know, you've got the World Health Organization, you can look through theirs. The Financial Times is a great one. And it can be a bit confusing when you look at them because they're all of these numbers. But like you say, they provide a number of different ways to look at the coronavirus pandemic and how it is increasing or rising and falling in different countries.
Mm-hmm. And this, of course, serves as a tool to be able to compare. So how do we calculate then? How do we make sure we are comparing correctly?
So this is a lot of what the discussion and the debate is around at the moment. We sort of have league tables of which countries are at the top and who's in the top 10. And there are a number of ways that we can rank countries. The first is very simply by the number of cases. So that is simply by tallying up the number of confirmed cases in countries and ranking countries from highest to lowest.
Yeah.
And if you did that on the day that the New York Times published the story, you would see that we had the fifth highest number of cases. But the word which you mentioned, which is really important, is compare. And we know that by comparing just numbers, we sometimes don't get a very good understanding of how the pandemic is affecting individual countries. And that's where infection rates come in. And very simply, the infection rate is just a measure of the number of cases in a country, mm-hmm. taking into account the size of the population. And this is important because if we want to go with a simple example, if you had two countries with exactly the same number of cases, you might say, oh, they're equally affected. But if one of those countries had a very small population, that country's infection rate would be a lot higher.
Yeah.
So the infection rate actually allows us to say, out of all the people in the country, we look at how many people have confirmed cases, and we're able to figure out what that country's infection rate is.
This reminds me of our calculation of the murder rate. Remember when Independent Online was saying that it was in KZN.
KwaZulu-Natal, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That they had the highest murder rate. And this is the same, in fact, because we're calculating the rate in comparison.
It is. And that's a very good example in comparison, is that just comparing the number of murders in, say, each province would be interesting and it might provide us some insight. But what an infection rate does or a murder rate does is it tells us the likelihood of that population either falling victim to murder or becoming infected with COVID-19. So let's look at what the ranking actually was and see how far off the New York Times was.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, the New York Times linked, like I said, to its own dashboard. And when you checked the dashboard and you sorted countries by infection rate, you actually would have found that the own dashboard from the New York Times ranked South Africa 17th in the world on the day that the article was published. And that was with an infection rate of 1,032 cases for every 100,000 people in the country. By comparison, the country that was ranked fifth was Panama, which is a country in Central America, and they had an infection rate of 2,005 cases per 100,000 people.
Yes. So if we go by infection rates, we then have a very different picture to what we had thought, because I'm looking at the ranking as well. They have Qatar in number one. And they look at the total number of cases and cases per 1 million people. And the US is sitting at ninth, even though we always talk about, what the percentage of infection rates from the US contribute to the global infection rates.
Absolutely. And the table which you're looking at and which we'll share actually comes from the World Health Organization, and they include a few more countries and territories that the New York Times didn't. So according to this ranking from the WHO, we're actually ranked 20th. But like you say, you can see how different measures give us different snapshots and different perspectives.
Yeah.
And when you look at this, a really interesting one to compare as is number 8 and 9. At 8, we have Peru, which has, you know, a tenth of the number of cases of the United States. But because of their much smaller population, they have just slightly higher infection rate than the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you know, you need to look at a variety of statistics. You can't, you know, often just picking one and focusing on it gives you a slice of the picture. But just like with murder rates, infection rates really help us look and see what countries are really carrying the heaviest burden.
When I opened the show, Kate, I was talking about the fact that government as well as researchers are looking into 40,000 excess deaths and wondering about the real rate of infection and deaths in South Africa. And so that's a question that we've yet to answer. Does the question of the true level of infection play a part at all in how we consider this question?
Absolutely. So when it comes to, you know, any health statistics, whether you're looking at TB or HIV, when you look at the statistics, you have, for the most part, especially when they're official recorded statistics, remember that they are just that. They are cases where, for example, with COVID-19, there were people who have been tested for COVID-19, they have tested positive, and that has been recorded by a government or by a health institution. When we spoke to experts, they said that they think that not just for South Africa, but globally, most countries' true infection rates will be higher than what is officially recorded, because there are people who are not going to be tested, maybe because they're asymptomatic or were sick and didn't get tested for COVID-19. So the true infection rate for South Africa, but also for all countries around the world, mm-hmm. is probably, you know, not reflected in these statistics. But this is the best available data we have at the moment. And importantly, experts said that, you know, the only way to get closer to actually knowing the true infection rate in any country would be to do routine testing of people. And that includes asymptomatic people.
Right. And so let's get to the conclusion, because I wouldn't want to get an email from you saying, where did you get that? And that's what you do. You contact the person who's made the claim and you say, where did you get that from? Point me in the right direction. And once you've done everything, you come back and you say, this is what we have found. And people go on to obviously make amendments and correct what they've said or reported.
So yes, that's what we hope happens. And in this case, that was the outcome. So the verdict for this is that the New York Times was incorrect. South Africa does not have the world's fifth highest COVID-19 infection rate. Depending on the data set you use, we're ranked either 17th or 20th. And when we got in touch with the New York Times, they very quickly amended and corrected their report and included a correction error. And that's really what we like to see, because everyone makes mistakes, even Africa Check. But what is important is when you become aware that you've made a mistake, you have to act quickly, correct the record, and be transparent about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. So I love that. And that they're also gracious and did the right thing in correcting it. And so let's go on to the second claim. I have seen a number of things, not just on WhatsApp, but just on Facebook too, about the thermometers, the infrared thermometers, that so many, I even have one in my house because I thought if my temperature starts to do things, better know what it is. But infrared thermometers, questions have been raised about their safety and whether or not they can cause damage to certain parts of the brain.
They have indeed. And in the past few weeks, not just Africa Check, but fact-checking organizations around the world have really seen an increase in the type of misinformation around infrared thermometers and the supposed health risks that they pose to us. But how we picked up on this actually was through a Facebook post, and it was a post that claimed that the thermometers were causing health issues because they were aiming infrared rays at the pineal gland, and it said that this gland is located directly in the center of your head. And along with a YouTube video, it said that these infrared thermometers are really posing a huge risk and really shooting infrared rays at this very important gland in your head.
I need to do a quick Google search. What does the pineal gland do? What is its function in the body?
So the pineal gland, what most you know, most of the messages that we've seen around this suggest that it's right up in front, the front of your head, just behind your forehead. But it's actually a small P-shaped gland in the brain. Mm-hmm. And its function isn't actually fully understood, but we do know that it produces and regulates some hormones in our body.
Yes, and I see it says even including melatonin, which is so important for us to be able to sleep. I value
exactly. So,
sleep is so
you
important.
Value your sleep.
So when I saw that, I thought, "Whoa, pineal gland, we need to keep you in check." So how do they yeah. work? How do these thermometers work? And what is the theory behind this claim?
So I think the first thing we need to, you know, debunk straight away is that these infrared thermometers do not emit infrared light. Infrared light is a type of light that's not visible to people. We can't see it, but we can feel it as heat. But these thermometers aren't shooting it out. They're not zapping you with it when you turn them on. What they are designed to do is that they detect it. Mm-hmm. So they can't emit it and they won't ever emit it. And this has been widely debunked by many fact-checking organizations. So when you pick up a thermometer, you point it at someone and you turn it on, it's not emitting or putting out any infrared light. It's designed to detect it. And that's because it's detecting heat in our body that is being given off as infrared light. So that's the basic principle. And if you see any of these videos, you don't need to get worried about them and you certainly don't have to be sharing them on.
Yes, we can confidently shut down the argument in our WhatsApp groups and say, it's not true. It's not true.
But Africa Check said so.
Exactly. Exactly. So do you close your eyes when your temperature is taken, Kate? Because sometimes
I do. I sort of instinctively.
Yes, me too.
As soon as it comes up, I sort of close my eyes.
A little bow of the head,
yes.
You know? Yeah.
I know. But there's also been quite a lot of discussions about, you know, these thermometers and whether they are effective in actually doing their job. And in our investigation, we actually looked at a review of 37 studies mm-hmm. that had looked at these thermometers and how effective they are and where they should be used. And it had some interesting findings. One of them was that they were found not to be accurate enough to replace rectal thermometers. So likely, you know, this isn't required when we go to the shopping center, but in any procedure, if you're at hospital mm-hmm. and you needed to have your temperature taken with a rectal thermometer, an infrared thermometer wouldn't be a good replacement. But the study also found that it could be an effective replacement for less invasive thermometers. Another question we got is, should you measure the temperature on the head, on the forehead, or on the wrist, as some places are doing?
Yeah.
And the general advice is that aim for the head and you'll get a better reading than on the wrist.
Yes. And I don't know about their calibration, to be honest, because I tried two different ones and the one was bringing me in at 34 point something. And then the other one at about 36, higher 36, you know. And I just wondered that the same moment aimed at the same part of the body. And I wondered about the calibration of some of them.
I know that there have been concerns and it's not something that we've looked explicitly into, mm-hmm. but I can assume that there could be a number of different issues that could affect it, including calibration. But I would also think the way that it's used, the design, and the make of the model.
Yeah.
But I'd say that, you know, when in doubt, you know, there are a number of other ways that you can test your temperature if you're at home.
Okay.
And a standard thermometer, I think, is still pretty accessible to most people.
When we get them again, because they also sold out.
This is true.
They also sold out.
Along with yeast.
Yes, and all the baking stuff. But it's back now. It's back now. Hopefully the thermometers as well are back. I haven't checked in recent time after getting one of these ones. Let's quickly wrap with the last one. Something that the health minister said about our relationship with alcohol. In his statement, there was a correction needed.
There was. So he wrote a guest column for News 24 where he made a number of claims about South Africa's relationship with alcohol. He was right on two points. Only about 30% of South Africans over the age of 15 drink, and South Africans who do drink are among the top drinkers in the world. But where he got it wrong was that he claimed that South Africans drink more than anywhere else in Africa. That's not correct. If you look at the statistics and just at drinkers, you'll find that three other African countries drinkers drink more, and that's Tunisia, Eswatini, and Namibia. And if you look at per capita drinking, which is the amount we drink, and you look at everyone in the country, even people who don't drink, you see that Nigeria is higher than us. So the health minister was wrong on that count.
Ah, phew, because I don't know, the feeling that I get is like a little bit of relief, because as South Africa, we're always pushed as the comparison or a look at what's happening in Africa, because we keep data. You know, we keep our data better than many other African countries. And so often we whip ourselves because we always think we're worse than this one, worse than that one. And it could be due to a number of reasons. For some reason, we're always the one at the front when we need to think, when the world needs to think about what is happening in Africa. South Africa, because we have data, gets pushed to the front. So to be honest, even with this one, I kind of feel like, phew, at least there are other countries in front of us.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, maybe a last word to the listeners today is that if you ever hear that South Africa's the worst or the best at anything, just know that for the most part, you can find out if that's true, whether it's looking for the data for yourself, whether it's speaking to an expert or even getting in touch with us or 702. You know, information is out there. Tools and resources are there to help you sort fact from fiction. And that really can only help to make us more active participants in our country and in holding our leaders accountable for what they say and do.
Yes, yes. And I think I might have a revolt on my hands, and you just might be back, Kate. It's a conversation. It's a conversation. I have a revolt on my hands. Thank you as always.
Thank you so much, Azza, and thanks for the great chats over the years.
Yes, absolutely. That is Kate Wilkinson, and she's the deputy editor at Africa Check, a fact-checking organization that we've learned to lean on, especially when it comes to sorting out fact from fiction. As we've seen over the years, a number of claims have had to be clarified.